new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Good afternoon. It's Sunday, November 10th, and you are listening to the College Football Daily, a 24/7 sports podcast dedicated to catching you up on and breaking down the day's college football news, all within 15 minutes or fewer. I'm Connor Tapp, and on Sundays, the day's college football news is the games that just happened on Saturday. So Trey Scott joins me to unpack everything we just witnessed. Trey, I mean, I feel like we've been complaining throughout the season, a little bit chalky, but the last couple weeks we've had quite a bit of turmoil, and boy, did we get it in bunches on Saturday. Let's start with the headliner. LSU beats Alabama 46-41. LSU jumps out to a 33-13 halftime lead in Tuscaloosa and hold on for dear life to beat the Crimson Tide 46-41. So, you know, this is an outcome we all thought could happen. It's about what we, I think, what how we thought it might look, maybe except for Alabama just totally not showing up for half one. So what do we feel like we come out of this game understanding that maybe we didn't going in?
I would say LSU is, I mean, Connor, I thought it was 33-13 or whatever at half, and LSU starts driving in the second half, and they obviously had that, you know, fumble interception combo, but I was like, is this about to be 40-13? And I guess my big picture takeaway in that regard was it felt like one of those moments that we overreact to in regards to Alabama. Like, is this the end of the dynasty? Like, they were about to be down 40-13 at home.
Right.
And I was like, dude, this is it. Furious second half rally. They finally got Najee Harris involved. I thought Tua was heroic, but I think the big takeaway here is this just might be LSU's season.
Yeah.
Like, this is a perfect storm. A quarterback like this does not come along every day or every year. Or if you're a program like LSU, this is a once in every 20 years type of team. The receivers, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, all of a sudden going from sort of a veteran, whatever, running back to a superstar. Joe Burrow locked up the Heisman on Saturday, you know, barring a total regular season meltdown. This feels like a team of destiny.
Yeah, really impressive performance from LSU. 31 of 39, 393 yards passing for Joe Burrow, added 64 yards rushing.
I mean, that's insane. That is insane against Alabama. I know this isn't your older brother's Alabama defense, but that is just, like, I can't say enough things about Joe Burrow.
Yeah, he's incredible, and you kind of are waiting for a moment where the LSU offense is going to kind of disappoint and kind of revert to our prior expectations of what an LSU offense will look like, kind of the mistakes they'll fall into, but it's just not happening. And you mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Man, Joe Burrow deservedly gets like all of the credit and attention, but I don't know if I have more fun watching a college football player than I do watching Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Just the combination of his build and everything else. I mean, he's just, it's like he magnetically repels tacklers. It's really something to watch. And big day for him, 103 yards rushing, 77 receiving, 4 total touchdowns. Just absolutely immense performance out of him. And there will be, you know, talk about whether Alabama is still in the mix in the playoff race. And we'll get into that on our Monday episode when we kind of preview the playoff committee's top four. But just in terms of how good is Alabama, Trey, do you think Alabama is still a top four team in this country?
I actually do. I don't know if I say that because I think Alabama's, you know, incredible, or because I look at the other teams and I'm like, well, Penn State, Georgia's loss to South Carolina looks horrible. So, look, here's the thing for Alabama. I think Tua, you know, I think Alabama fans, I hope they're nothing but, you know, just grateful and impressed by that performance. I know 21 for 40 is not ideal. I know he had a horrible fumble, but he threw for 400 yards, four touchdowns, was not 100%. I think Najee Harris sort of had his breakout debut that we've been waiting for a few years, and it's a shame for him that Steve Sarkisian would not really involve him in the game plan in the first half. And I think if Alabama does go into LSU with a sort of the LSU game with a better strategy on offense that involves Najee in the first half, I think they might have won this game. I think Alabama, it's hard to say that those two teams out there aren't two of the best four in football, especially Connor. Like you watch that game and you compare it to, and I know we'll get to the other games, you compare it to the rest of the landscape. You look at Oklahoma needing a 2-point conversion stop to beat Iowa State. You look at Penn State lose at Minnesota, and there was nothing fluky about it. Minnesota just kind of beat the doors off Penn State a bit. And whatever, you know, the Pac-12 is what it is at this point. I don't know how Alabama, I know we have 4 weeks to go. I don't know how Alabama isn't one of the four best teams in football. They have everything. I know the defense is flawed, but who is going to stop LSU? Who can do that? I don't know if there is a team that can.
So the outcome of LSU beating Alabama, it's surprising, given how long it's been since it's actually happened, it's surprising to see it come to fruition, but given the quality of the two teams, not such a huge surprise to see LSU go into Tuscaloosa and get that win. What was a massive surprise was Minnesota beating Penn State 31-26. And maybe you disagree, Trey, I don't know, but I didn't think looked especially flukish in how they did it. I mean, you do have three interceptions from Penn State and Sean Clifford, which is pretty tough to recover from on the road in the Big Ten. But, I mean, eye test wise, Minnesota looked like they belong on the same field as Penn State. And I don't know. I'm kind of reassessing what I'm thinking of the Golden Gophers right now.
Yeah, I kind of had the last few weeks have been thinking about Minnesota and Baylor in the same bucket. And I guess that's important because we're talking about like non-brand name playoff contenders. Minnesota looks better than Baylor. And I guess what I mean is Minnesota's got dudes. Tyler Johnson, one of the best receivers in school history, if not the best. Rashad Bateman. Chris Hummer did a profile on him a few weeks ago. Former high school running back, kind of a do-it-all guy now for Minnesota. There was nothing fluky about that, and I think people thought Penn State's defensive speed might swallow Minnesota up. That wasn't the case. Minnesota was making plays all day, especially down the sidelines through the passing game. And yeah, like you turn the ball over three times, you're not going to win many games, but Minnesota like made plays on Sean Clifford, and Antoine Winfield Jr. had a heck of a day. Nothing fluky about it. Nothing. Massive for Minnesota, and I think it might cause us to sort of rethink their playoff credentials if they don't win out. You know what I mean? Like we had said, okay, they have to win out to make it. I'm not saying Minnesota can, you know, can lose to. It's hard to see anyone beating Ohio State, just like it's hard to see anyone beating LSU right now. But I think Minnesota, yeah, like they certainly should be higher than 17. And I mean, they looked just, I guess I'm rambling, but they were the better team than Penn State. I think they would have been the better team on a neutral field too.
Yeah. And at least in the very short term, it'll be interesting to see how the playoff committee thinks of this win, because last week the Gophers were all the way down at 17 and you could justify that with their extremely poor strength of schedule. But now, I mean, they just beat the number four team in the country. And I think only LSU at this point has a better win. So it'll be interesting to see how aggressive they are in moving Minnesota up. Let's stay in the Big Ten with, you know, if Minnesota keeps winning, and they're not guaranteed of winning the Big Ten West, but if they do, they'll face Ohio State in all likelihood and from the Big Ten East. And it was having nothing to do with the game Ohio State played on Saturday, which they won 73-14 over Maryland. It was a very tumultuous weekend for the Buckeyes, because on Friday morning it became public knowledge that Chase Young would not suit up for the Buckeyes game against the Terps. There were reports that Young could miss four games, but Ohio State's SID said those reports were incorrect, and that right now the Buckeyes currently have no expectations for how many games Young could end up missing. Trey, I mean, how big of a blow? Is this a situation where we think if the Buckeyes can get over the line in the regular season and hopefully get Young back? Or I don't know. How are we processing this information?
Are you kind of, I wonder if I'm like you in processing it more of like a, what this means for Chase Young. Cause I think it's very clear Ohio State, they certainly won't need him versus Rutgers this weekend. I don't think they're going to need him versus Penn State or Michigan either. I'd be interested to get your thoughts on that. I just think about this as more of a Chase Young welfare scenario. You know, we've got a kid. Yeah. He broke the rule. He took a loan he wasn't supposed to from someone who, you know, he had not had enough of a prior relationship with to not classify this as like an, you know, unauthorized amount. But I just feel bad for Chase Young. I feel bad for his, you know, pursuit of NCAA sack history. I feel bad for his Heisman chances. I wonder now if he'll even get an invite to New York. It certainly doesn't affect his draft stock, but kind of sours his year a little bit. And if there's any doubt, there should be none. This is the biggest story in college football this fall.
What, Chase Young?
Chase Young. I think, you know, how this is handled and the fact that maybe it's because it happened on the same day that over in college basketball land, you know, Memphis's James Wiseman, who might be the number one player in the NBA draft, is dealing with a similar situation. Yeah, I thought this was the biggest story when it dropped on Friday morning of the college football season. Okay, we've got the best player in the sport in a time when the winds of the NCAA are trying to change, doing something that's fairly innocent, but technically against the rules. You know, it's like, you know, it should be nothing more than a slap on the wrist. If he has to miss four games, I think that would be just really unfortunate for Chase Young, but Ohio State would be fine and won't need him until the playoff.
Yeah, and like you said, I think it's really unfortunate, and his Heisman chances are probably toast at this point. Yep. Less because I think the Heisman electorate is likely to punish him for this, but just because you've already missed one opportunity to kind of chip into the deficit you've got toward the sack record to potentially have that something that's on the line during those games against Penn State and Michigan in the last 2 weeks of the season. So that's unfortunate. Anytime you have a chance to witness greatness in a player, you know, in the final season of his college career, kind of have a chance to reach for something we've never seen before and then be denied that opportunity, it really sucks. Hopefully there's still plenty of football left for Chase Young in front of him, whether it's college, NFL, whatever. So, and, you know, maybe he looks back on this as just an unfortunate speed bump along the way to a very successful career in football. But it, in the short term, it really sucks a lot. And selfishly, as an enjoyer of the sport, it sucks to see one of the best players, if not the best player in the sport this year, kind of robbed of some opportunities potentially to really shine on a big stage late in the year.
Yeah, I was really excited to see him play Penn State and Michigan. But again, I don't think they need him.
Yeah, perhaps not. You never know. Rivalry game on the road. Never want to say for sure. But Ohio State proving on Saturday. And really, I mean, not a whole lot to take out of that 73-14 win over Maryland, other than maybe just that the degree to which Ryan Day appears to have this team focused, especially in contrast to previous Ohio State seasons. And I know Maryland's got awful, but it really feels like we're looking at a different Ohio State team than we've seen in years past. Talent is still there, but the level of concentration to have a massive distraction like this going on and to not lose a single step and be extremely dominant against a conference opponent, really impressive.
This is what the best teams of our lifetime and of what college football history do in the weeks in which no one's watching them. And they just go out and pound their opponent. You know, anytime you drop 70 points, especially Connor, like, I would not have blamed Ohio State for having a real snoozy one here, because you got the Chase Young stuff. You still got Rutgers next. You know, you're cakewalking. But yeah, I mean, this, we talked about LSU being maybe a team of destiny. Ohio State looks like a team of destiny too. Yeah. I would be interested to know the Vegas line between what the hypothetical Vegas line between Ohio State and LSU, and then, you know, throw Clemson in there too, would be. As we sort of narrow down the focus from nine great teams to six teams to five teams to four teams to maybe three teams now.
Yeah, Bill Connolly's SP Plus has Ohio State significantly ahead at number one right now, and to the extent that that's, his system is kind of usually in sync with Vegas, so I think that would probably be an indicator of like who would be favored on a neutral site there. Trey, throughout the Saturday, you know, we're all kind of multitasking, trying to figure out, all right, who's got a comfortable lead? I can switch the channel, tune into another game. So on Saturday night, Oklahoma goes up 42-21 on Iowa State with 3:47 left in the third quarter. And I'm like, great. All right. I don't need to think about this game anymore. Good yep. job, Sooners. You did it. You beat a salty Iowa State team. But the Cyclones were not done. They fought back and down 42-35 with 24 seconds left. They throw Brock Purdy throws a touchdown that might have tied it if they decided to be safe and go for the PAT. But Matt Campbell elects to go for two. And in that instance, Brock Purdy's pass attempt was picked off. And the Sooners end up prevailing. They kind of stave off a reverse Kansas State here. Trey, I mean, you were kind of touching on this earlier, but man, eye test wise, it feels like Oklahoma, even though the results, Kansas State aside, are still their wins and not losses, feels like eye test wise, we're sliding in the wrong direction here.
I think so too. And you won't find many people who respect Iowa State more than me. I love Iowa State. I think Brock Purdy should have found his tight end in that end zone and won the game here. Oklahoma's favored by two touchdowns. I give them credit for coming, you know, for finding a way to hang on to win, but I don't think this should be a win that helps their chances. Because not only did you not cover, well, you obviously almost lost to, you know, good to better than good Iowa State team here in Norman when you should have been laser focused too. I mean, we've got OU versus Baylor next week. It's sort of your Big 12 game of the year. But I think Oklahoma, you're right, is sliding away from the tier they should be trying to reach as far as the best teams in the country tier. And I think because of who they can play going forward, where you've got Baylor twice maybe, you've got number 23 Oklahoma State, OU's going to have a really nice shot to improve its playoff resume. Regardless of that, I don't think they look right now like a top four, top six, seven team in football. I think the Pac-12 and Alabama right now, if the season ended today, should get a nod over Oklahoma.
Speaking of Baylor, boy, did they play a weird game. This is not one I've really gotten to spend much time with. So I'm kind of going based off the box score here. But man, in a day when LSU and Alabama put the dreadful memories of their 2011 game of the century meetings together, you had a Big 12 game look a lot like a early part of this decade SEC game, and really in score really closely resembling that LSU win in Tuscaloosa. It was TCU gets out to a 9-0 lead on all field goals. And then slowly throughout the second half, Baylor chips into that lead with all field goals and eventually ties it up. And despite never crossing the 300-yard mark on offense, Baylor comes out with a 29-23 win in triple overtime. Wow.
Baylor is made a sort of nice pact with somebody. I mean, Baylor is living dangerously right now, but living well, too. I keep thinking this house of cards is about to topple over, and that probably happens next week. And I guess you'd rather be lucky than good. I'm not sure Baylor is very good, though.
Yeah, it's.
But I mean, it's November 10th. It's really, really, really hard to be undefeated right now. But they're skating by against pretty mediocre teams.
Yeah,
I mean these are not Big 12 powers they're beating here.
Yeah, so next week, I guess it's a matchup of Big 12 playoff contenders who have been trying so hard to lose for the past month, but for the most part winning. Not a whole lot to talk about in ACC land. Clemson blew the doors off of whoever they played. I've already forgotten.
NC State. It was 42-0 at halftime. Mm. But Clemson is doing, I mean, we talked about Ohio State blowing teams out. Clemson's starting to do that now, too.
So I think potentially more consequential for Clemson is the result that happened in Blacksburg, where you had Virginia Tech beat Wake Forest 36-17. We're looking at a scenario where Wake Forest might have been Clemson's only top 25 win. So now that's probably off the table, at least in the short term. Deeks
could, but what's the consequence for that?
I guess the consequence is when we get to the playoff committee.
Seating?
Yeah, and we're looking at seeding. We're looking at, you know, potentially head-to-head. How does Clemson's resume stack up against another team's resume? I mean, we've seen last week the committee thought poorly enough of Clemson's resume to put them fifth, despite being the defending national champions, despite being undefeated. And so, I mean, so I think it's a big knock on any opportunity that Clemson might have had to improve its strength of schedule. And maybe also just as big a blow to that is South Carolina losing to Appalachian State at home.
So that's true. That's true. That's true. And we'll save our predictions for tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think Connor, Clemson, and going into today on Saturday, it is what it is. Clemson cannot lose a game and make the playoff. But Clemson's in if they win out. So, but that's a interesting little teaser for our predictions, because I think I know where Clemson's going to be Tuesday, but you never know. But no, it's the Wake Forest is or not the Wake Forest. The ACC is very, very bad this year. Very, very, very bad. Although, can we give some credit to Miami for a big blowout win over Louisville?
And FSU winning too.
FSU, yep. Yeah.
Going on the road to BC, getting it done with the interim head coach.
All they had to do was get rid of Willie Taggart.
So let's head out to the Pac-12. We kind of focus on the playoff race as kind of the grounding for these Sunday podcast discussions. So we haven't really talked much about the Pac-12 because Oregon and Utah were both on a bye, but we should point out that Southern Cal stays alive in the Pac-12 South race with I don't know whether it was a Vegas upset, but it was a moral upset, I guess, on the road against Arizona State.
Yeah, Arizona State playing without true freshman quarterback Jaden Daniels. USC true freshman quarterback Keaton Slovis had 4 touchdowns in the first quarter. I kind of thought this was going to happen. I'm not going to take too much credit because Arizona State didn't have its starting quarterback. But the whole Clay Helton's tenure has just been impossible to predict.
Yeah.
Especially this season. You think they're dead, they win. You think they're going to be, here we go. They're going to knock off, Washington, and then they lose. So I think Clay Helton's done regardless. But I think it's cool that his team is still fighting for him, because there's no way he's coming back. And yet here these guys are on November 9th, still trying to play football. And there's not every team does that. And if you don't believe me, go read the Sports Illustrated story about Virginia Tech throwing in the towel last year, not wanting to make a bowl game.
The midseason coach firings really kicked off last weekend with FSU pulling the trigger on getting Willie Taggart out of town. Arkansas follows in FSU's suit on Sunday by firing Chad Morris following Arkansas's 45-19 loss to Western Kentucky. Chad Morris's reign in Fayetteville ends without him ever notching a single SEC victory. Chad Morris, this hire seemed like such a smart move for Arkansas, such a good hire, and I think we all expected it. Him to have some measure of success, even after the winless SEC season last year. He recruited so well in the face of that tough season that we all kind of thought, hey, just a couple of breaks start to go their way on the field and he's really going to have something going here, but it has never really materialized.
Yeah, it's going to turn out to be just a disastrous tenure. I think when he got hired, there was plenty of optimism. But when you look back, the warning signs were there. His record at SMU, and I know he took over a very bad program. I don't think he had an above 500 record in 3 years out at SMU. So you kind of look back at Chad Morris and at Willie Taggart in the same way, and you go, okay, I think if it's a Power 5 school, it's an SEC school, ACC school, I think I need to see more from this coach at this previous stop. I don't think, now that I look back on it, I don't think that I like Willie Taggart taking 3 years to get things going at Western Kentucky and South Florida. I don't like Chad Morris, you know, never being above 500 at SMU. I like that Chad Morris knows offense. I like that he's, you know, worked under Dabo Swinney and has sort of that culture and that philosophy. But I don't know where Arkansas goes next. We were talking about this in the office the other day, Connor. It's like, has Chad Morris ruined this roster or this team or this program so much that a Gus Malzahn might say, I don't want this anymore? Or a Mike Norvell at Memphis goes, I'm walking into a no-win situation. That'll be what's interesting, is the damage here, where you have losses to San Jose State and Western Kentucky in the same year. Does anyone see this as a short-term fixer? Because you have to be able to fix in the short term. You do. I mean, now we have two coaches who've gotten fired, you know, before two full seasons.
Yeah, and I mean, if there are just too many examples out there of coaches needing a lot less time than these like 4 or 5 year rebuilds that you kind of hear people talk about sometimes. That even in, I mean, you really have to look no further than what Matt Rhule is doing at Baylor. There was not a worse situation at a Power Five program in the country than the one that he inherited. And 3 years later, they're in the playoff hunt. So,
yeah, I mean, they were, you know, great point. They were marred by, I mean, it wasn't like a Brett Bielema mess. It was like an absolute disgrace. The Baylor had a black eye on it, and they had one, you know, he took over a one win team. Great point. And even, you know, staying in the Big 12, Chris Klieman at Kansas State replaces a legend who had sort of let the program sort of crater. He beats OU in year one. It's, and hey, we've got people spending money, a lot of buyout money going around. I mean, Connor, this is now Arkansas is paying around $10 million per buyout if they're still paying Brett Bielema's. And, you know, maybe they're going to have to afford some of Gus Malzahn's buyout too if they want him.
Well, that is going to do it for today's episode of the College Football Daily. If you appreciate what we're doing, we ask that you do one thing this week to help spread the word about the show. If you need a suggestion for a thing you could do to help spread the word about the show, I don't know. How about leaving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts? That'd be pretty great. For Trey Scott and our producer, Tony Levitt, I'm Connor Tapp, and we'll see you on Monday for our College Football Playoff Selection Committee Top 25 Preview Edition of the College Football Daily.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.